The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
From the Knapsack File Studios in Burbank, California, it's always nice. It's a touch cold and a touch warm. This is the Knapsack Files. I'm Kat Knapsack, and guess what, everybody? It's been a while. Things happen. You guests get scheduled and canceled, but this guest, oh, he scheduled and he showed up.
I did not cancel.
You did? No, I mean, did I say you canceled?
No.
No, I'm saying you didn't.
No.
Others did.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I'm showing up.
You are here. You're now, look, some of the, in case they're listening, a lot of people canceled for good reasons. Illnesses come up, but you said I'm here. This is Van William. He is a bona fide rock star in my heart, singer-songwriter. He is a Star Wars fan. You may have seen him on Jedi Council, heard him there. He's going to be on Force Center soon with me. And also, kind of from my hometown neck of the woods, we're going to dive into a lot of it. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Great to be back home in sunny Southern California for a little bit in between tours and talking about life with Kylo Ken Knapsack.
I'm happy you're in here because I'm going to tell this funny story. So I'm an old rock DJ. I say that over and over again. We got it, Ken. You spun discs in the mid-90s. You like the Gin Blossoms. There you go. Up in San Luis Obispo, California. Pismo Beach, to be exact, from our radio station. But anyways, you were booked to come on Jedi Council because you're a big Star Wars fan. And I don't work there anymore, so I'm not in charge of the bookings. I just show up. But I saw a name on an email, and I was like, that's interesting. Flash forward, a couple months earlier, my car radio went out years ago because I have a crappy 2004 Camry. So I had my car stereo, so I have to listen to the radio, which is weird because a lot of people don't just listen to the radio. So I listen to a station called KCSN. It's a Cal State Northridge station, but a couple years ago it blew up. They decided to make it more than just a college radio station. Nick Harcourt's there in the mornings, all this guy, Sky Daniels, the program director, they come in there. And they're spinning this record from this guy named Van William, Revolution, First Aid Kid on the vocals there too. And I'm like, digging this song, get the album, Countries. And suddenly, the morning of Jedi Council, I'm listening to your album. I'm like, wait a minute. What's that email? What's that name on that email I saw? Oh my God, it's Van William. He's in the studio with me today.
That's crazy.
So small world, a mutual appreciation society, because you somehow, for some reason, enjoy me blabbing about Star Wars, man. But that's my monologue to open the show. Karma, fate, connection has brought us together.
And to turn the table, literally, I mean, I've been watching Jedi Council and following you for a really, really long time, too. So I was hoping that when I got Jedi Council, when I confirmed that I was going to be on Jedi Council, I was so thrilled. I was so excited. I tried to explain to my friends what it was, and they couldn't really comprehend that there are YouTube shows about Star Wars or anything like that. But I was hoping that you would be on there, and you were.
Yeah.
And then we learned we're from the same place.
Yeah. So I started talking about radio, music, whatever, like I do. And you said, well, where were your DJs? Like, oh, it's this little town, like Pismo Beach. You're like, you grew up in a couple different spots, which we're going to dig into, but you're anchored in many ways in Cambria, California.
Yeah. That's my hometown for sure.
So for those who aren't familiar with the little West Coast, Central Coast, California, I grew up in a place called Arroyo Grande, which is part of the Five Cities. One of the Five Cities is Pismo Beach, which is all about 15 minutes south of San Luis Obispo, the home of the Cal Poly Mustangs, about 40 minutes north of that on Highway 1, maybe?
Cambria, 30 California.
If you're going fast. Yeah. I drive slow, so 40 minutes in. Yeah. I had a Plymouth Colt back in the day, it took a while to get up there.
Yeah.
And Cambria is a beautiful beachside forest.
Exactly. Pines by the sea.
That's a great
It's 5,000 people, nothing going on, movie theater, they outlawed any sort of chain restaurants or fast food or anything long ago, which is great. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, that's just tremendously boring. There's just nothing to do. No bowling alley, no anything. And so I would always come into San Luis Obispo, which was, 30 or 40 minutes away after school once I got a driver's license.
Right.
And so, although I'm from Cambria, like I spent almost as much time in San Luis Obispo as a kid.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're some years younger than me. We're in the same generation, but your little, you know, our high school years are different. But yeah, I in my head canon, we probably crossed paths at some point.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I was at Boo Boo Records at least 5 days a week.
Oh yeah,
constantly there.
What time frame? The mid '90s.
Let's see, late 90s, late, early 2000s.
Okay. So yeah.
But I popped in mid 90s.
So mid 90s was where I was there most of the time, but I moved to LA in 1998. But I, you know, still, even to this day, mm-hmm. when I head home, I make a trip with, if I can, to downtown SLO and I pop into Boo Boo Records. Mm-hmm. And just, even though I don't buy CDs much as anymore or have room for LPs, I feel I have to go.
Absolutely.
It's a mecca.
It's some sort of, anyway, you just have to do it.
You have to do it. Have to experience the Central Coast there, and you're playing there soon this weekend.
Yeah.
Actually, the time of this episode airs, it's this weekend at Boo Boo
Records. This weekend, yeah. Record Store Day, April 21st, 6 p.m., and I haven't played back in San Luis Obispo County in years. We used to, my old band, Port O'Brien, we played there all the time. It's kind of where we got our start. Mm. And then my next band, Waters, only played there a couple times, and I haven't for my new project yet. Mm. And so this is a perfect opportunity. There's not a lot of venues there in the county anymore. So this was a perfect opportunity. And I still know a lot of the folks that work at Boo Boo's, so it'll be fun.
Did you, so Cambria, and then you spent a lot of time up in Alaska.
Yeah.
Kodiak Island, mm-hmm. Alaska.
Kodiak Island.
That's because of your father's career, right?
Yeah.
To the fisherman, mm-hmm. commercial mm-hmm. fisherman, the big stuff, the mm-hmm. real stuff.
The real stuff.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was our entire family's income. Was 4 months of commercial fishing for salmon in Alaska. So basically, the four of us, my mom, my dad, my sister, and I would spend 8 months in Cambria. Mm. And then as a family, we would go up to Kodiak Island for... My dad would go for four. We would go for three. Mm. And he had been doing that since 1968. Wow. He grew up down here, and he hitchhiked up in the summer and got a job working on a boat. That wasn't even his plan, really. He just happened to get a job walking the docks, and he loved it. And so he went up the next summer and the next summer and the next summer, and he did it for 50 years.
Wow.
And he eventually bought his own boat after about 10 seasons of working as a crew member.
Yeah.
And I started going out there and working when I was maybe a little before I was quite old enough, but I got out there. And that's the way I put myself through college and you know, supplemented the musician income. And it's brutal. It's brutal. I don't know if any of y'all have watched The Deadliest Catch.
That might be the frame of reference for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's not quite that extreme. Okay. That's crabbing, which is in Alaska the same, but it's in the winter. Okay. And so in the winter, it's always dark. Yeah. We fish in the summer, so it's always light. The crab are way offshore.
Yeah.
And salmon are right on shore. So I kind of describe it as Deadliest Catch light. But the season is much longer. And their season is about a month long, give or take. We are out at sea for up to 7 or 8 weeks at a time without touching land at all.
You've got sea legs.
Oh, yeah. There's no shower. On the boat, there's not even a toilet.
I'm out.
There's no toilet. It is gnarly stuff.
It is old school
stuff. Yeah. And there's no internet or any phone or anything at all remotely. There's a satellite phone that's $2 a minute and barely ever works. But otherwise, you're completely just in the middle of the Alaskan wilderness.
And you are doing this, like you said, to pay your way through college, supplement your income. This is an extreme day job. But there, what about it kept you too? There's something you had to like.
Absolutely. And I still, there's a part of me that wonders if I should go back up there and start doing it again. Honestly, it's the type of job that an experience that just gets under your skin, and it happens. I've seen it happen to some people who go up and work. Then they can't stop thinking about it. They want to go back. Other people just are immediately like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
But for me, I think it's this return to a more, sort of a primal state in a way. Like my mind just immediately switches gears, and all I can think about is how is catching fish. You know, it's very strategic, and you have to know so much about the island, and you have to know so much about the wind and the tides and where the fish go at certain times and all these things. So it's like it gets under your skin, and once you become a part of it, to not do it feels really weird. Like this is always the time of the year where it's almost summer, and I'm always I have this this really intense urge to
primal
go back
urge.
Up. Yeah, absolutely.
It's because you're connected to some real base level stuff.
Oh my God.
Primal, it's just, like you said.
Yeah, it's just survival. It's just catch how every morning I just wake up and my dad and I would just the goal is catching as many salmon as we possibly can. That's the only thing that matters.
That's it. No TPS reports.
Nothing. No TPS reports.
Nothing.
No texting friends, no girlfriend stuff, nothing. Just that.
And that would you said for your family for that was the income for the entire year.
That was it. Then my parents had 8 months off.
I mean, there's somebody who said
it's an argument. There's an argument for it. It was not always easy. I mean, we've had several years that they had to remortgage and we were totally effed financially.
Right.
Because it's fishing. It's, you never know what you're going to get. And then we'd had other years that we were able to, live off and put some away. So it's really a gamble. It's really a gamble. And, but the 8 months off thing is hard to complain, but it's the same amount of hours. My dad calculated it out.
Oh,
and
really?
It's the same amount of hours as a whole year, but it's just condensed to 4 months.
It's just putting it all in one little hyper-focused spot there. And from that, so you're experiencing that growing up. You're growing up, Cambria, I wish I could transport a lot of people there. This is a wonderful neck of the woods here, the country, not too far from Hearst Castle. A lot of people a lot of people know that.
Most of our economy is just Hearst Castle. Tourists,
you can hike at one point, Cambria, and you can kind of look out, and if you squint, then you can see Hearst Castle.
Yeah, you
on
can
the
see
hill.
It from our house out the window. Yeah,
really? Yeah,
just a speck.
Just a speck up there in the hill. So from that to what you're doing now, when does the music set into your soul?
When I was a kid. Green Day for me.
Gotcha.
I was in fourth grade and Dookie came out and my mom would tape videos on the VHS on MTV that I was allowed to watch. And
mother.
Yeah. She taped When I Come Around.
Yeah.
And I just wore that thing out. I just watched that video so many times and I lumped something about that song and that band. I became completely obsessed and that's all I wanted to do was to be Billy Joe and to be in a punk band. And I just begged and pleaded until my parents bought me a guitar. They bought me an acoustic, much to my chagrin at the time. This
can't
little
plug
nylon
that in yet,
string.
Yeah.
But from that moment on, I became completely obsessed with music and wanted to be in a band. That was the first little injection of it.
I mean, I'm fascinated by that because a lot of stand-up comedians want to be rock stars. A lot of rock stars want to be pro wrestlers. A lot of pro wrestlers want to be rock stars. That's kind of the grass is always greener. But I've always the music is not in my soul, but appreciation of it is. So naturally, I wanted to be in bands. There's a book somewhere in this apartment of really bad song lyrics, 300 or so. From my mid-90s phase.
We need to get that out.
Yeah, dig that out. It's somewhere around here. I'm embarrassed even now to think of it. But there was some okay stuff.
Yeah, you could condense it, I'm sure, down to 10 solid hits.
10 solid hits. Like, give me an album, right? So my point to that is, a lot of people at some point, like, oh, I want to be in a band. You've made it a career along with the fishing to get you going early, but you've made it a career. You've fronted two bands now, Waters and Port O'Brien.
Yeah.
And then now you're out on your own.
Yeah.
So you're doing it, man, in this great way. What, take me back to that moment where this doesn't become your afternoon hobby, it becomes your pursuit.
It was in college and I went to UC Berkeley and
you hippie.
And I didn't know really what I was doing. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was studying cultural anthropology, not a ton of dough in that field. But my, you know, my side passion was music, and I was working a lot harder on it. And I put together these songs that became the band Port O'Brien. And I just thought it would be impossible to make any money on it. But I started just sending my songs to any blog that would write about things. And this was back when there was like a million music blogs, and they were just actually listening to unsolicited emails, which is incredible. And I just started doing that. And then, you know, a few wrote about it, but nothing really happened. And then all of a sudden we played a show. We had a show in San Francisco at a club called the Makeout Room in the Mission. And I was really nervous and excited. It was our first like headline show in San Francisco. And I thought, well, you know, some blogs have been writing about us. Maybe, you know, maybe some people would come. I was like 21 or 20 at the time. And there was like hardly anyone there, of course, hardly anyone. And I was getting all grumpy and depressed and had a couple beers, and we played the show, you know, and I thought it was fine. But then afterwards, it's a classic story, but it turns out I had no idea, but one of my favorite musicians and my favorite songwriters to this day was there. And his, he goes under the name M. Ward, who is an incredible songwriter who I had been a fan of for years, and he actually has San Luis Obispo roots as well.
Does he?
Yeah, he went to school there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I listened to She and Him as well. Yeah.
He has a band with Zoe Deschanel, She and Him, and he was there and he loved it. And I couldn't. I was like freaking, completely freaking out talking to him afterwards. And he loved it so much that a couple days later, I woke up and I had been just selling CDs directly off CD Baby or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I woke up and there were like 30 orders. And we usually had like two or three a week, you know. And I was like, what the hell happened? And I opened my browser, and there's a popular music website called Pitchfork.com.
Oh, yeah.
And he had given an interview with them, and they asked him, what's your favorite new band? And he said, Port O'Brien.
Look at that.
And then what's your favorite new song? And he said, I Woke Up Today, which was one of our songs. And it just, which I just recorded it at home in my parents' house with one mic. And all of a sudden, then he shared our music with his friend Connor Obers from the band Bright Eyes.
Yeah.
And then Connor reached out to me and asked us to go on tour. And then all of a sudden I was like, what the hell? What's going on? I had no idea. I was still in college, you know, going to school and then going up to Alaska in the summers. I was like, well, this is insane.
Wow.
And then managers started reaching out, lawyers started reaching out, labels started reaching out. And, that was it. I was like, all right, let's go time. It's go time. Mm. I have to kind of seize on this little moment. And that even now is probably the most exciting. It's not that it's been all downhill from there, but that was the most exciting period of the music. Just when it went from nothing to something.
Yeah.
And then it's just been varying levels of something since then. But that was an incredible. And Matt is still a friend of mine, M. Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told him several times.
Yeah.
How much that meant to me.
I mean, it's all, yeah. I mean, that's the power of passing it forward. That's the power of taking a listen to someone else and, you know, maybe a podcast you like or a script you know, that kind of stuff can happen. But what you just said here is when it came, when it showed up, you said, let's get our hand. It's Harrison Ford when they made that interview. What'd you do after Star Wars? Now I could really get started. You're locking yourself in and believing in what's happening.
Yeah.
Did you feel you were worthy of this?
Yeah. I've always been a little on the fence about that. I've always felt there's been a big part of me that feels not good enough. I think it's just part of the, you know, artistic struggle.
Yeah. It's going to make you a good songwriter.
I still feel like I'm kind of faking it sometimes, and especially compared to a lot of my friends. But at the same time, I listen to a lot of other bands. I'm like, oh, I'm better than that. I'm better than those guys. So it's a mix. It's a mix. I'm always kind of on the precipice of of, you know, losing it with just thinking I'm terrible, you know. But I do think I'm bringing something to the table. Yeah,
you absolutely are. You can craft a tune, my friend.
Yeah.
You can craft a tune.
I've gotten better throughout the years, too. That's something I pride myself on.
Well, that's good, too. How do you... and I do want to talk influences at some point, everything. Mm-hmm. That's part of the fun of music discussions. Mm-hmm. This isn't just about music, but I'm fascinated with the careers and these choices. But when you sit down to... And this goes back when I've talked about, you know, when it become a hobby to something you're gonna do. Like when you're sitting down to craft a song, sometimes I'm sure it's inspiration. It's 3 a.m. You roll over on a napkin, you write the hit lyric. But other times you got to sit down, you got to work on this.
Oh God!
And that's when this changes. This pursuit changes, right?
Absolutely. It's songwriting is a huge struggle for me. It's like it hardly ever comes easy. Similar to like my career history, I guess, like the first little moment that something comes out of nowhere, that is magic and amazing and brilliant and easy. Usually, like I'll just be in my room, a little stoned at night or whatever, and just noodling on guitar while I'm watching some TV show or something. And I'm like, oh shit, that's that. And I, you know, get the voice memo app on my phone going. that's
new technology.
That's the fun part.
Yeah.
And then the process of like structuring it out and demoing it and writing lyrics, that's just beating my head against the wall for days. It is, and going through, I was just before I came over here today, I was at my house working on a song and I was so depressed. I was like, I am just a terrible musician, terrible songwriter. What am I doing? I need to go back to Alaska. And then 10 minutes later, I'll be like, oh my God, that's so brilliant.
It's the best.
It's a terrible, if any kids are listening, do not pursue this career. Completely.
But look, hey, that's a realistic explanation, which it can be inspirational in its own way. Like, you know, I'm hearing you on the radio. You're on the radio, not just like, hey, the Saturday night local indie show. You're in rotation, man. Yeah. And then you still feel that. That's all of us at some point then.
And this new record, that's the first time I've ever really had much radio success. So that has been cool to see how, first of all, the people are still listening to the radio. Maybe it's people like you. It's broken in a car and just happens to be on. But just people coming to shows, they're like, wow, I heard you on the radio. That's new to me. So that's been really great.
Yeah, that's a fun change of what's going on there. So let us delve into the past about your influences. I mean, you're already mentioning names of contemporaries and colleagues that I definitely am a fan of. But what got you to that point other than Green Day? That
was the entry point. No music I've ever made was that inspired by Green Day. Then basically in high school, I got really into what was then known as indie rock, which I, you know, that term is whatever. But I got my best friend's cousin in high school was 2 years older, 3 years older, and so much cooler than all of us, Anna. Yeah. From Cambria, and she introduced us to Modest Mouse. And at the time, they were totally under the radar. It was before the Moon Antarctica. We're getting deep here. I'm sorry, but
I got a lot of deep music fans to listen, man.
So the Lonesome Crowd of West had just come out, and that record, or a couple years before, I just discovered it regardless. And that record completely changed things for me. And I started going to Boo Boo's and saying to them, I like indie rock, and I couldn't believe. Now I cringe just even retelling that story. But as a kid in Cambria, I didn't know that it had any weird connotations or anything, and I had no way of expressing like what else I liked. And I just, and they said, okay, well, what do you like? And I just said, could say Modest Mouse. I had no idea. There was no internet for me to look. At least for me, my parents didn't have a computer at that point. So then they showed me Built to Spill and other like Pacific Northwest indie rock stuff. And I got really into them. I got really into 7-6-4 Hero. And then that led me, and I was really into Fugazi and just kind of, I went, Sunny Day Real Estate was like as most emo as I ever went. I was kind of turned off by anything more than that. And then I got back into Neil Young and the Beatles, which I love as a kid, my parents introduced me to, and I was kind of like, I liked it for a while. And then I was like, I hate this because my parents like it. Then I got back into Neil and the Beatles and John Lennon's first two solo records in particular. And I just completely became obsessed with the Beatles and Neil Young.
That's fantastic. And I'm a Beatle nut, obviously. My listeners know that there. But what the Lennon's first two, Plastic Ono Band and then Imagine album. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's Lennon at some real raw points.
Yeah.
So you're connecting to some real three chords and the truth stuff going on there with him.
Yeah, Plastic Ono Band is definitely top five album of all time for me. There was something just about the emotional just completely unrelenting vocal performance from Mother onwards. But that Neil Young maybe was a little more inspirational in terms of what I was doing.
Gotcha.
But the Beatles kind of opened so many doors for me. But Neil Young was definitely, in terms of influences, I would say, was probably number one. And not just, you know, partly because he has so many different voices. He can do the kind of, you know, acoustic, folky stuff of like Harvest, or he can be really raw and wild, like in Tonight's the Night. And like late 60s through mid to late 70s, Neil is my sweet spot.
Is your jam?
Yeah.
When did your band really take up to 05 range?
Yeah.
Porter O'Brien range?
Yeah.
Porter O'Brien
range? A little later, I would say 09, 08.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
That's funny. Yeah. Okay. That makes, remember I was talking to you off air? By 2005, that's when I stopped writing for Tiny Mixtapes.
There you go.
I went into about a 5-6 year period where I was like, I don't know other music. I don't know new stuff. And then I got back in about 2012 because my CD player died in the car. And that's where fate takes
me. There we go.
So how did you come about to forming a band and going that route versus?
Well, it started, Porter O'Brien started just me.
Okay.
It was just me. And I just didn't want it to call it my name, so I just came up with a name, which was a place in Kodiak Island where my parents met, Port O'Brien. Hmm. And then as the years went on and the days and weeks went on, you got to play shows and you got to have a band because I was writing arrangements for drums and everything. And I knew so many musicians, so it just made sense. At first it was really loosey goosey. It was like whoever was around. It was like, oh, can you play? I can play bongos. Sure, whatever. Come on. Like you can do this. And now the thought of having bongos on stage gives me, I cannot believe I would ever do such a thing. But, and then it became kind of a band just kind of naturally. And, Porter O'Brien had 3 records and the band was constantly changing, So
you were at the center of it. You were the rock and roll star there in the band, right? Bringing in everyone. I get it. I see your story.
My former partner Cambria became as the years went on a singer as well. And she was an incredible lyricist and visual person.
So, got it. And then you form a second band, Waters.
Yeah, Waters.
If I was still on radio, your tune "Stand by You" would be spinning.
Oh, nice.
My program director would be like, "That one's not in the playlist." I'd be like, "I'm playing this one."
Yeah, Waters. Porter O'Brien broke up when Cambria, the girl, by the way, her name was Cambria
from
Cambria.
Cambria
from Cambria
on purpose.
Her parents met there and then moved away. And had her, and then moved back a few years later.
Well, that makes sense.
So anyway, we called her, but her name is Cambria.
That's a pretty name, so it works. Yeah. I get it.
We broke up in the middle of a tour, which was so fun.
That's the most rock and roll thing you said all day, man.
Such a great experience to break up with your partner in the middle of a tour, and you're surrounded by 3 other dudes in a dirty Ford van traveling around the country making very little money. It was so fun.
It's not as fun as when Fleetwood Mac did
it. It was so terrible.
Right?
It was terrible. It was so terrible. And but on the one of the last tours we did, I met another girl in Oslo, Norway, and fell in love immediately. And she was a much better partner than Cambria. And I moved there. I moved to Norway because I didn't live anywhere at the time, and I just I don't know what else to do. I'm in love with this girl. I might as well move there.
It's a great story.
She was at a show and, I saw her from stage and we started talking afterwards. And there I decided, I thought about continuing Porter O'Brien and the label and my manager wanted me to keep going, without any of the other people. And I just didn't feel like that was the right call.
Yeah.
It didn't feel right to Cambria, in particularly. So I decided to start over, start a new band, and I couldn't come up with a name, so I just called it Waters. It's really not a good story behind that one.
And we travel.
Yeah, and that started kind of as like a similar kind of vibe, a solo thing that turned into a band.
Right.
But then as I moved from Norway back to California, it became a real band for the first time, like a real, real band. And our sound changed and became more, actually it's slightly inspired by Green Day. I wanted to make records. At that time, like everyone coming to my shows were like guys like me, like grumpy, just kind of arms crossed, you know. But I wanted to make a record for like kids.
Yeah.
And so I made a record called What's Real, and that one did really well. And we, you know, it took us from just playing, you know, little teeny rooms. So we played on Conan and got to do really big tours. And I got to meet Ringo Starr, who was the guest on Conan. That happened to be the guest on Conan that
you
same
show. Casually drop in that you've met some Ringo.
I know, yeah. That was pretty big. And so that was a really exciting phase as well. Mm-hmm. And then
that leads you to
yeah, I'm rambling here, but
no,
I guess
you're not
that's
rambling.
The point. Yeah. That record continued, and by the end of that, though, I was kind of like, this isn't exactly what I want to be doing music artistically. And I was dealing with a breakup with the Norwegian girl.
Oh, wow.
And we were together for 6 years, and it was brutal breakup, devastating to me. And at the same time, my dad was retiring from fishing, and I was devastated by that because I always thought that maybe was going to be a career backup.
Yeah.
And I just love it there and didn't want to lose that part of my identity,
right,
who I was. So I kind of felt like the rug was being pulled from under me in a few different directions. And I started writing these other songs. And I went to, my folks have a little cabin up in the Sierra, and I just went there for weeks at a time and worked on these songs. And it sounded nothing like Waters, and it sounded maybe more like Port O'Brien, and I just felt like something totally new, and it felt more raw and more personal than anything I'd done by far. So it made sense to call it Van Willie, my first and middle name, and just own it
and just step out
from there. Yeah. And we at the same time recorded another Waters record, but the label Vagrant completely fell apart. And just everyone who was there when we got signed was like fired or quit, and it was classic, just like total disaster.
But
Waters to me is still ongoing. It's just on hiatus right now, but I love everyone in that band and our fans and everything. So, yeah.
Yeah. But you're out in the front now, and you had talked about earlier, you said, you know, when you're struggling sometimes with your place, like we all do, but then you say you feel you've gotten better. So now do you feel with these things going behind you, these classic big heartbreaks, you're dumping it into this thing and spotlight on yourself in a way. No name, your real name, your first and middle name front on the album. You feel it's the right time, that this is a good
move? It does, yeah. Yeah, it does. And the label's great. The team is great. And to be, you know, the first single Revolution, my best friends, there are these two girls from Sweden, have a band called First Aid Kit, and they sang on it, and we just did a two-month tour all over North America and Europe with them, huge places. I was opening for them, obviously. Most of the people didn't know who I was, but, you know, that's why you do it. And that was great. It went top five on AAA radio, and it felt like, it feels like a good start. So now we're going back out with Lissy in all throughout May. We'll be on tour throughout the country in Canada, and we'll go from there. But at the same time, it's scary starting over at a more advanced age, career restart button. It's generally terrifying.
Let's dive into that there. Yeah. By the way, AAA radio, guys, is Adult Album Alternative, right?
If I admit, you got it.
I was an AOR station, album oriented rock.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Which was, I could play the non-singles, deep
so
cuts.
Good.
I love the old Radio Attack here. You say it's terrifying. I get why it's terrifying. But on the outside looking in, it's like, cool, you got a new album. You're this, but you're really, do you feel something go terribly wrong? You feel like what's that terrifying feeling?
I mean, mainly financially.
That's a feeling.
It's a feeling. I mean, the music industry is not what it used to be.
It is.
In some ways it's better. There are certain tools now that were not present years ago. I can easily record a song in my bedroom and put it on through TuneCore, and it's on Spotify 2 weeks later, and people are listening to it. There are other things that are a lot more difficult. People aren't buying albums as much. Right. That's an understatement.
Yeah.
There are still ways to make money, but it's kind of like a shot in the dark. You know, right. most of my livelihood has come from syncs, meaning like when they choose your song to be in a TV show or a movie right. or a commercial or whatever. And those are just totally random.
You're
completely out of your control.
Yeah.
And when they come, it's awesome. And it's this big chunk of change and then nothing for so long.
Right.
So it's, you have to be pretty smart. And I've gotten in a position a couple times where I have like this big check and I get excited and I live outside of my means. And, right.
I'm going to buy all the Lobot figures exactly. and Star Wars stuff. Yeah,
exactly. So it's a constant struggle. But at the same time, I really, A, can't think of anything else that I'd want to do. And B, I have to remind myself that, you know, that I'm, you know, approaching my mid-30s and I've been able to survive pretty comfortably by playing music. And that's, you know, I'm not, you know, as big as, you know, most of my friends are more famous than me. It's still, I'm still able to put food on the table, and really, I'm a minimalist. I don't really need that much more. So,
well, you seem like that type of cat who grew up in Alaska and Cambria. There's yeah. not a lot of, like I said, Cambria is this wonderful tiny town. It's, but there's big money in there for a lot of resort type, like people live up there or go up there for a lot, the wild yeah. wine stuff. But I'm yeah. talking to me, that would not surprise me that you're kind of like, I'm good out here. On the maybe in a tent, even looking at the
yeah,
lake. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the risk, the rock and roll life that we've all of us have grown up seeing and believing. Yes, there's been some golden eras and everything, but now it's you're living. But this is truly because it's something that's in your heart.
Yeah.
This is you're gonna be. They take it away from you. You're still gonna be writing songs.
Yeah, I mean, I'll always make records. Until I die, there's no way that I could stop. And for now I feel just as dedicated as ever, you know, to what's going on. So, yeah.
Well, this first album out, under this new version of you, Countries here,
yeah.
it, like when I say it is an album, meaning you've got your single that brought me in Revolution, boom, that hits. And then, they're just starting to play before I found you.
Yeah.
Which is good. You know, it's a great follow up single. That's the one it's also the number one track on the album. But it harkens back to why I loved music, why you talk about the records and the industry has changed. And I love all the technology. I'm not the old grumpy Clint Eastwood on the thing, but there was a time where you would get the album, CD or otherwise, and you'd go sit down and you listen to it. And that is an experience. And so you have definitely written an album. Did you intend it that way, or am I just romanticizing?
No, 100%. That's the way I create, right. because I'm from that time where I got into music through records. I never, the thought of just listening to one song or something, that to me is still kind of extreme. My girlfriend now, she's a little younger than me, and she listens to just playlists on Spotify mainly.
Right.
And I can't. Once in a while I'll put a playlist on, but for me it's like it's too jarring. It's like this and then that and this, and I want to live inside a longer creation. And I don't like to be curmudgeon-y about it either. And I know like David Byrne, I'll listen to an interview with him, and he talks about how the album is basically just this. It happened to be the length that you could fit onto two sides of a wax record. It's arbitrary. It's, you know, it's kind of pointless. And I agree with that, but I can't help the fact that that's how I grew up and that's how I got into music.
Well, yeah. And David Byrne knows that more than I, you know, I agree with that sentiment there, but there's something about, I mean, when I'm just talking about, you know, yeah, you got 13 tracks or whatever it is, generally the length of most albums, but it's also about opening up, getting the song lyrics, getting the pictures.
Yeah.
What does Van look like for this album? What beard did he grow for the next album? That's part as a fan, and you are clearly a fan of what you're also in, too. I mean, that's the reason you got into this. That was part of the experience, too, which just seems a little, I mean, it's still there, you know. You still got a cool hat on and a beard. Well, you know, you're clean shaven, but, you know, like some stubble.
Scruffy.
Some scruffy, you know. that's still there, but that seems to change as well for me. Where was this whole thing, you know? Mm-hmm. It was like, what are Noel and Liam going to do for their next album in terms of haircuts?
I mean, for me, it's still the album rules all, you know. Yeah. I mean, I spend an obscene amount of time thinking about the sequencing, just the order of songs. Huge. And also not even that, but how much space in between each song. On Spotify, it doesn't matter anymore. But on the vinyl record, that's very specific point of mastering as to how many seconds in between it. I obsess over that. And so the album artwork, I mean, Sylvia, my girlfriend, did all the packaging and we worked tirelessly on that for weeks and weeks and weeks. So it's hugely important for me. But my friends and I joke at the end of the day to everyone else, I don't know if it matters.
I don't know. I don't think it does anymore. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Times change. You're in my studio right now. There's a little black little footrest. You open that up, there's a bunch of CDs in there, right? You know what I mean? I'm that guy. I've finally moved past buying them. Own all of your stuff digitally, all right?
Nice.
So yeah, other than the nice LP copy you've gifted me, which is with my small but mighty LP collection. So yeah, in the end, does it matter? Times change, you know.
But then once in a while, it matters to someone, you know.
Yeah.
And it really, honestly, if it only matters, it sounds cheesy, but it's true. If it just matters to like one person, then I'm fine. I'm like, sweet. We connected.
I love that there. On this last album, what was like the hardest thing, the hardest song to write on air? The hardest thing to, but did you ever put something into a song and think, I'm not comfortable sharing that, saying that, thinking that?
I don't know. I feel pretty safe in a way where my lyrics have always tended to obscure a lot of the more specific details of what I'm going through to protect certain identities. but I would say the most raw song to me is a song called The Middle, which is a more like mid-tempo ballad. And that for me, just thinking about it kind of, I turn inward and remember those days that I was working on that song and thinking back to my relationship that inspired them, inspired that song. And I still get a little torn up when I'm playing that one live.
Ah, I get it. I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, I never experienced that because all my poems were crap. But it takes you back because that's what good music does.
Yeah.
I can be as happy as I want to be. One of my favorite songs is from a Josh Joplin group called I've Changed, which is a pretty graphic song about a suicide. And favorite of my morbid, it's a great song. But I used to listen to it when I was in a darker spot in my life. Work past that, I'm through that, things are good. You know, we all have our struggles, blah, blah, blah. That song pops up on my iTunes, and I immediately, I'm like, I'm back. And that's not a great thing.
No.
But I'm like, it's like, oh, yeah, I still feel that way, and I have to kind of control it there. But that's the power of music, good and bad.
It's the most powerful thing. I really, you know, I'm not a religious person at all, but I do. And I'm very much, you know, a student of the Enlightenment way of thinking. But there's something about music that does transcend something that we can't really talk about in words. And for me, that's just as true now as it was when I saw that stupid Green Day video. It's just really, like, I'll have moments still now where I'm listening to something on headphones. And it completely, my favorite record of all time is In Utero by Nirvana. And that for me, I'll still put on and it can totally transform my state of being more than anything else that I really know about.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm going back to some of those albums, those moments that affect you. You know, for me, George Harrison was my Beatle, and including solo work. And the day he died, I showed up to work. Start work like 6 a.m., 6:30 a.m. And some friend, I was like, you like the Beatles, right? One of the Beatles died. And I was like, oh, because I knew he'd been struggling.
God.
And I went up to the top of the mall where I worked, the parking store, and I bawled my eyes out in a way I didn't expect. I was like, oh, this guy was the soundtrack to my certain part of my life, you know? And that's the power of it.
Yeah, I remember that day too.
Yeah. So, and you know, What Is Life and You and Dark Horse and All Things From the Past. All every time I heard it on that day, it was like I was going back to when I was like 18, 19, struggling, yeah, depressed,
100%,
trying to be inspired. And now you're a part of that.
Yeah.
Someone hears a Van Williams song and they're like, I remember when I broke up with that girl or I got dumped.
Yeah. And going back, I mean, that's still the thing that keeps me going, as scary as it can be financially and stuff. I have, you know, my the best moments of my career have been when people have reached out on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, or email, or just in person at concerts. And, you know, there's people out there with tattoos with my song lyrics on their bodies.
Nice.
And it's just like, and to hear them talk about how it's helped one of my songs has helped them through something is really, I can't stress enough how much that resonates with me.
Yeah, man, I get it from the, does it feel good? Not just in like, yeah, I've done it, but like it's surreal in a way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And,
cause it's not just like, hey man, I like your music, you know, but it's like you and I, Van, were in a dark room together. You weren't there. Your music was,
yeah,
but we were there together.
Yeah. You know? It's really strange to be on the other side of it, but because, I've been so impacted by songs in the past, I can understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Eels. And one time I was at Davy Wayne's in Hollywood, this little club thing. You walk through a refrigerator to get in there, and you're cool, right? Mm-hmm. I'm there, and Mark Oliver Everett shows up, and he's friends with someone in our group. And I'm standing next to him, and I'm like, "That's E. Oh God, that's E." And my friend's like, "Yeah, he just knows Mike. Like Mike lived in his house for him. You want to meet him?" And I was like, "I can't. I can't meet him because there's some songs in his repertoire that I've been so affected by that I don't know what I could say."
Yeah. I mean, that's usually the safe way. I've been fortunate enough to meet a couple of my heroes, and I'm always a little, there's part of me that just doesn't want to go there. But, usually I got to hang with Neil Young a few times and got to tell him how much his songs have meant to me. And, and that was an incredible experience. And I'm sure he gets that, I mean, more than hardly anyone. And, the fact that he was so kind of open and nice, and I could see in his face that it's still that no matter how famous and whatever he is, like he still is impacted by that specific thing.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got him. And then the fact that he's not over that in a way, you know, that still would bring him back to the table.
I don't think you ever do get over that.
No, that's powerful stuff, man. Powerful stuff. It is hard to look at where you are now and say, you know, plan a career, right? I mean, yes, you can go record songs and I want to go on tour and I want to do this, I want to, but really you don't know. You're at the hands of fate in a long way, which is the hardest thing of any kind of creative endeavor. Mm-hmm. But where you are at right now, what things do you feel you really want to accomplish as an artist, as a performer?
I'm mainly just to set myself up in a way to sustainably live and create records. I mean, that's all I've really ever wanted, was to be able to do this for as long as possible and to support myself and eventually a family. And that, what does that imply? That implies getting my records out there a little more and being able to headline a tour where you make some money. I mean, that's the goal.
No, and,
it's hard to do because there's so much overhead with touring and you have to get to a pretty high level before you make a dollar, and you have to lose a lot of money before you make a dollar. But luckily the label I'm on, Concord, has been, incredibly supportive and, financially and otherwise. So I feel good about the path that I'm on. Mainly just, focusing on writing more and creating as much as I can.
I love that, man. Yeah, it's, I remember reading, Jacob Slichter's book, the drummer from Semisonic wrote the book, So I Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, and talks about their, you know, rise, and they're, for me, they're one of my favorite bands, so they're not a one-hit wonder band, but Closing Time and the whole story. It's just like, so, yeah, maybe I don't want to be a rock star.
Yeah.
the business of rock and roll is very real.
It's very real. It's very real, especially with touring. It's one of those things where it's like you make zero, and then all of a sudden you're making a lot. And to get to that point is very, very challenging.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've never really been able to make it there all the way. I've had little blips. But then, you know, something will happen. I'll break up with my girlfriend or whatever, you know.
No, I appreciate the candor of it because it is the reality of this. I find myself outside of the bounds of a full-time job. It's like, what am I trying to do? I want to do this every day because this inspires me every day. Talking into microphones, as stupid as it may seem, mm-hmm. something I want to do at three, right? So it's like, yeah, then the reality is you live in LA and
it's expensive.
You know, could I podcast in Montana? I might find out one day when I get sick of it all, but I'm not ready yet. So when you talk about career goals and stuff, it's like I want to see Van William live at Bootycon. Bootycon.
Or Bootycon.
Or Bootycon. Or Bootycon in Japan there. You can do that. Or you can just keep going forward there.
Yeah.
Or you know what? Or you can end up fishing too. And
true.
Can do it all.
True.
Because it's not, it's hard to separate the identity sometimes, huh?
It is, yeah, it is. But, you know, part of the, for me, is since my dad retired and that window has kind of closed, I, mainly just because there's such a huge buy-in to that industry.
I mean,
just the boat, you know, boat costs $500,000 and the permit's another 100 and that's 50. I mean, it's just too much. But since that window has closed, I've been more focused on music in a way, and I think more productive, and I think been making better stuff. So I think there is some value too to just not even being open to other things, you know, just tunnel vision.
Well, I think you are well on the way to a wonderful next phase. I really do believe it because it's a bit of a classic rock story too, where it's like, you know, I'm a huge fan of Ryan Adams, all right? And so it's like, all right, Whiskey Town was there, and he did that. Then all of a sudden, boom, boom. And that boom comes from preparation and skill and timing and all meeting up, like you said, where suddenly you get that call and M. Ward shared your tape like it's the old days. I have a lot of faith in what you're doing, my friend. It's been interesting to say to suddenly get to know you because I'm an old radio guy. All right, I'm gonna get a t-shirt that says Ken the old radio guy. And I it's not just a hit single, it's like the ability to craft a song is so there in you, and that never ends. So
thanks, man.
You're gonna, much like Star Wars, you're gonna be here forever.
I hope so. Thank God for Star Wars for bringing us together, man.
Absolutely, man. And you are gonna be on Force Center soon with a good Star Wars rank that's coming out. But more importantly, right now in the interim, I want you to put on a good Lando cape, feel good about yourself, and self-promote the hell out of what you're doing here. Tell all the folks where they can find you.
Hell yeah, come on over. We're going out on tour in all of May, touring with this incredible singer named Lissy. And all the tour dates and tickets and all that stuff are on the website vanwilliammusic.com. And you can follow me on the old Instagram and Twitter at vanwilliammusic.
You're really good at Instagram. You got the stories down. I do not have the stories down. I tried for a second. My lady friend was like, you idiot, you got to use the stories because it keeps your profile at the top of the page.
I know. Being on tour, it's a lot of good story footage, you know.
I'll share one behind the scenes thing here. And I think you put it publicly, but I love getting tagged in this little Instagram story where you and I were texting back and forth about our Star Wars ranked episode. And here you are with the fine ladies of First Aid Kit band and at Coachella. Uh-huh. You are a rock and roll star, man, and you're here going, well, Aura Singh and Garadan are my favorite. It was beautiful.
Yeah, in the hotel room, in Clara's hotel room, before their big performance on like one of the main stages of Coachella, and I'm just spacing out.
Yeah.
She's like, what are you thinking about? And I just start talking about these minor Star Wars characters, and she's like, oh my God, Van is so insane. So insane.
So thank you so much for coming in here. And to local listeners, that's right, if you're from my hometown, and some of you are listening to podcasts up in Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, San Luis Obispo, on April 21st, Record Store Day, you are going to be playing Boo Boo Records. And I wish I could be up in town. I can't. I went up for my birthday early this year. Normally I go, that's the weekend I go. My birthday is on April 19th. Tomorrow, if you're listening to this podcast on the day it was released. So you're at Boo Boo's.
Boo Boo's, headlining the Record Store Day and doing 8 or 9 songs and playing on the radio there too that day, KCBX, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Or at 3 o'clock, I believe, is the time. So yeah, come on and
love it.
And see, my parents will be there.
Oh man,
it's gonna be good.
So if you're a Knapsack Files listener from my hometown, go up there and tell Van after the show. After the show, let him get in his zone first. Worry about Star Wars characters. Play his music and then say, hey, you heard him on the Knapsack Files, and have a Central Coast connection. Be good. Van, thank you much, very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Guys, you can listen to the Knapsack Files on a lot of places, including Podomatic, Stitcher, and now Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio as well. Don't forget to check out my new fully functional website. There's kenknapsack.com, but that's just kind of a business card. If you need to look me up for some business stuff, you can go to knapsackfiles.podomatic.net. A blog is up there and ready to go. I've got some stuff planned. I'm on the Patreon as well at patreon.com/thenapsackfiles. And thank you, sir, for supporting me as well. I appreciate that a lot. And
all of you need to sign up as patrons.
A lot of stuff going on there. I'm on Twitch as well. If you want to see me play baseball, play Star Wars, wrestling, car racing, and a lot more, including some just video-related shows. No games, just me talking. Equipment's on the way, I swear. Go to twitch.tv/KenKnapsack. Guys, I've talked enough. Thanks again for Van coming in. Check out his album, Countries. It's so damn good. That is it. We'll see you next time here on the Knapsack Files.